It's a company called SIDN. I'm sure you've been overwhelmed by acronyms this week, and you will continue to be for the rest of the week, I'm sure. So SIDN is a company that operates .nl. They are also the company that is going to be operating .amsterdam on behalf of the .amsterdam registry. So there's, we're all aware of it. It will impact us in different ways, and some are seizing the opportunity in them.
Hi, I'm Adrian Quesada from Costa Rica. I'm talking on my own behalf. I would like to ask, how could we as individual fellows contribute to the work of the CCNSO?
Well, first off, it's an open meeting, so you're welcome to come and sit in it. The schedule is posted on the CCNSO website, which is a subsidiary of the ICANN website. First thing I would say is come and take a look at the schedule and look at the topics that may be of interest, because I'm sure there are some that won't be, but some most definitely are, and you get a sense of what the CCs do. I think that probably the best way to get involved is actually within your own domestic jurisdiction, whatever country you're from. Most of the CCs there have some component of broader work for their national environments, that they do other things on behalf of the internet community in country, and it's generally fairly straightforward to get involved there, and that helps shape that's right at the ground level is where you help shape the policies and the processes of your operator within country, and then bring that forward to the CCNSO. So we truly, you know, I think the other thing about the CCNSO, which I haven't really mentioned, is we are truly representative of the multi-stakeholder model. Most of us are responsible to our internet communities, not all of us, but most of us, and it's a real bottom-up grassroots internet community that helps shape us, and then we in turn bring that up into how the CCNSO operates. So the best way is get informed to begin with, and then I think the easiest way is to get active within the internet community in country.
And ladies, I know there's like a row there that started. Liana?
Hi, my name is Liana. I'm from Armenia. I talk Armenia. I know that we're part of CCNSO. I represent .am. And I have a question about payment. Isn't it obligatory to pay to ICANN for CC? You talked about a payment that we do not need to pay. Isn't there an annual fee for running CC TLD? This is my first question, and you talked about policy, that you're making policy. Since all the countries are limited within their country regulation, is the policy you're making is an advisory? Because I don't think that universal policy can be applied to all the countries. Is it the situation or not? Thank you.
So I'll answer your second question first. The kinds of policy we engage in, first off, as I said, is very limited because of that exact reason. And the type of policy that we have worked on tends to be universally applicable, like IDNs. So the policies we worked on were about how IDNs would work, how some of the thorny issues, single character IDNs, for example, could be resolved. And in that sense, they are universally applicable in that those who use Arab script or Cyrillic script, regardless of your in-country situation, that's about how the script works at a technical layer, and that's what we resolved in policy. And that's why we don't do policy on many other issues that we simply couldn't, because we're too many discrete jurisdictions. In terms of your first question around the money, first off, it's voluntary. Today we have a banded model or a tiered model where there are a number of tiers based on domains under management. So those registries who would have under 10,000 domains?
Yeah, we have 25,000 domains so far.
Okay. So, you know, like I also said at the beginning, we have registries that literally have single-digit thousands of domains, and we have registries that have 13 million domains. Yeah, so trying to find a fee structure that works for everybody is a challenge, but right now we have a banded model. So there are a handful of bands under 25, is under 10,000 is where it starts, and it's a $500 fee. So it's a relatively modest fee, and it escalates up to $100,000 plus. There are registries, there are CC operators who pay between $150,000 and $250,000 right now, today. Under the new framework, we will be making a materially increased overall contribution to ICANN. So right now, all the CC operators together pay $1.7 million into the ICANN budget, which we as a CC group acknowledge that that is not enough. For what we receive, that is not a reasonable number. And over the next few years, we will roughly double that contribution. There's some ramp-up phase. And I mean, these are all the things we've discussed in the finance working group. But we will double that contribution. And the top band will pay about a quarter, $225,000 to $250,000 a year. And those would be registries over 5 million. Registries under 10,000 would be paying $500. And then there are a series of bands between those. And that's how it'll be structured.
And we could go on until 9 o'clock, and which would be great if we could do that. And I'll say in an effort to equally amongst 4 days and an hour and a half each morning get all of our chairs in to at least have the chance to meet with you and share with you, we have to cut our chairs off. And I really hate doing this because Leslie has been in for so long and has been amazing. And I sat here and listened to you, and it was like listening to something completely different again. Seriously, I've been doing this 6.5 years, and I never leave the room when the chairs come in because I always hear something a bit differently, and the questions that you ask are different, and I learn every single time. So it's pretty amazing. You have about 8 questions, I know, that are in the queue, but we also have our good friends from NPOC who have a hard stop at 5 of 8 to get to another meeting. So I'm going to thank Byron for being here. And I know that the questions you'd like to ask, Byron, I don't know, maybe I can just get send them each by email, if that's not a problem. And they can connect with you also at the CCNSO meeting in your off time when you're not trying to chair.
Sure, I'd be happy to respond to any emails. And CCNSO meetings are all day Tuesday, all day Wednesday. So you can also stop in, check the website, look at the schedule, see if there's a topic that interests you, and you're welcome to join us today or tomorrow. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the week at ICANN and all your early mornings. It's very impressive you come every day at 7. Wow.
Yeah. So you guys, I really am. I'm so excited to see all the interest, and it makes me see that you're all getting what we're talking about, is that, you know, for each constituency, it's just the angle, you know, and the different ways that they're looking at things and the different ways they operate. And I've been... Thank you. So the strategic planning that Byron was mentioning is something that you really can jump into very quickly into that working group, and it's kind of a neat way to start out in the CCNSO if that's of interest, because it's a real learning experience from a bottom-up ICANN perspective to see who we are, how we're structured, and how we're moving forward. So I just want to key in on that if someone's thinking, how do I learn more about ICANN? Don't worry about whether you're a country code operator. Think about, what do I need to learn? And if you really want to learn about ICANN and where we're going, that might be a great place to start. So, Marie, I'm going to hand it over to you to introduce your team and to jump into the morning.
Thank you, Janice. My name is Marie-Laure Lemineur. I'm the chair of NPOC. NPOC stands for Not-for-Profit Operational Concerns, which is a terrible name, so I won't blame you if you don't remind it. If you remind NPOC, it will be enough. We're part of the GNSO, which is the important part. You know, we belong to the GNSO, the NCSG, stakeholder group, the non-commercial stakeholder group, which is part of the GNSO. With me today are two colleagues of the executive committee, Klaus Stoll, who is the... Well, who was until yesterday our program committee chair and is now, I'm happy to say that, is now a GNSO councillor. Because since yesterday he's sitting on the GNSO council. So we're looking for a program committee chair. You can apply if you're interested. This is completely new, by the way. And Rudy Van Snick, who is both our policy chair and also treasurer. So we have a very short amount of time. Oh, I forgot to say hello in Spanish. ¿Cómo están? Para los amigos latinoamericanos.
For the Latin American friends, you can call me Maria Laura. I am very happy to see a fellow countryman from Costa Rica. Oh, I see two people from Costa Rica. Okay.
Bienvenue en Argentine.
For our French friends, welcome to Argentina. And as I can want to promote multiculturalism, it's very important to work and to try to speak in several languages.
Very briefly, I'll speak about 5 minutes and then my colleague can build on what I just said. Basically, what we do is represent within the GNSO the interests of the not-for-profit community. So NGOs, in one word. So what we do on a daily basis is policy development, because this is what the GNSO does. Regarding the top-level domain names, the generic extensions, right? So one, I can give you some practical examples of the issues we work on. I don't know whether you heard about something that is called WHOIS, the WHOIS database. So this implies a lot of, there is a lot of privacy-related issues with the WHOIS issues. So this is like one big issue of ours, you know, because our members are NGOs and we present in the executive committee, obviously, we are representatives of the NGOs. So these are the kind of rights. We defend the specific rights, human rights, values that are very important to the hearts and the minds of NGOs, and privacy is one of them. Internet good governance is also very important to us. You know, transparency, accountability. So this is like a cross issue throughout the all. I mean, throughout ICANN. It's not specific to the GNSO, but this is the kind of issue that is important to us too. I'll give you another example. I was at the IGF a few weeks ago, and I had a very interesting conversation with a famous European child rights expert. And he was very worried. He approached me. I know him from previous work. I did with him, and he approached me expressing his concerns about the .kids extension that has been applied for. You see, he's not very familiar with the ICANN world and how this works, and he said, well, listen, can we talk about what is going to happen with, you know, with the .kids, the websites that will have a .kid extension, and what will happen, how can a private company he was worried about a private organization applying for an extension that in his view has a public interest value, and how the content that are going to be handled on those websites are going to be handled. I'm worried, obviously, about, you know, some of the safety safeguards that are going to be implemented. So this is the kind of issue we deal on a day-to-day basis. To give you a very practical example, because we don't have a lot of time, and I know that all this information is very new to you, so it can be overwhelming. But basically, I will hand over the mic to my colleagues, and I'm guessing they have a lot to add, and I can see that they have a lot of materials here, so this is meant to be distributed. So do you want to add, Klaus or Rudy? Yes, you do. I know. Oh, I know they do.
Definitely. Good morning. My name is Klaus, and I congratulate you to be so brave to be interested in ICANN. As somebody who's about 15 years or so with ICANN, I can tell you the most important thing you need to know about ICANN is it's a group of the socially most dysfunctional people you can find in the world. After you realize that one, everything's fine. And you accept it, and it's a great bunch of people, but they have their issues. What I want to talk about is that what my lord didn't say is that NPOC is actually the newest constituency of ICANN, and we are only about 2.5 years old. And that gives us the freedom to be a little bit different and to do things other constituencies don't do. So one of our role, I see it in ICANN, is to think about against the grain. And as you might have noticed, the internet governance as a whole is in a huge crisis. Everybody's running around and saying, oh, IGF, ITU, ICANN, WCAG, and things like that. And you can do that. But if you're a little bit cleverer, you actually sit down for a minute and think what's actually going on, what's underneath all that problems. And we did that. We did it for a long time, nearly 2 years, with a lot of people, old and young. And we actually came up with what we think are the two reasons why internet governance doesn't work. One reason is quite simply that we are using concepts of sovereignty and of rights and understandings which are based on territories, on physical territories, the ITU and even ICANN. But unfortunately, or fortunately, we are living in a digital cyber world, and these things don't work anymore. So basically what is needed and what will help everybody a hell of a lot to learn, to understand, and to work together if we start to redefine sovereignties. And that is a long thing to explain, but I will not do that because I've got some materials here, so if you want to read about it, please come. The other thing is, and you, and I'm living now dangerous because they heard that next sentence about 10,000 times, and they can't stand it anymore. The second big problem is quite simply that the internet governance is like a country where there is 1% governing the 99%, and the 99% don't even know that the 1% exist. Internet governance has a huge problem of legitimacy, because nobody actually knows what ICANN is, what it does, how it works, and we are merrily governing away. And who voted for me? When you are going into an ICANN meeting or a position, or you raise your hand and you think, please do me one favor, think all the time, who voted for me? Nobody. We have to change that. People need to know what internet governance is all about. To make a long thing short, we have a program called the iEngage Institute, which we are doing together with other organizations like the Global Knowledge Partnership, with the UN, and there are some materials of that here. And in that program, what we are doing is, for example, when you think that concept of sovereignty through, you come to the point that the only way of new multi-stakeholderism is not to go into another meeting, into another room, getting another cold from the air conditioning by talking, but that the new multi-stakeholderism has an element which is very important of joint implementation. So, for example, what we then do in the Institute is to get people together small group of people saying around the topic, for example, of GTLDs for jobs creation or for child online protection or for getting a global program together for informing people what's actually going on in internet governance. We're putting that, we are using that old model of putting people into a room, lock the door, and they can only come out when something not is even decided, but when it's implemented. And as I said, if you want to hear more, on Thursday we are at 9:30 to 11 o'clock in Retiro A, and you are more than invited. You will hear a lot, and I actually hope that you will also get engaged with the iEngaged Institute, and there are some membership forms. It doesn't cost you anything. Yeah, it costs you an arm and a leg. It costs you your brain and things like that. So, yeah, that's it. After that session, if you're interested in some of the materials, just let me know.
Thank you, Klaus. While we are in the announcement section part, before I forget and Rudy speaks, we also have at 9 o'clock today our stakeholder session, so from 9 to 12. So you are kindly invited to join us. It will be at the Atlaya room, which is in the hotel. So it would be nice if you could show up and we can discuss further how to join us. And if you're interested in joining, we have here a fact sheet, and or you can also a brochure, or you can also access our website. It's www.npoc.org. Rudy, over to you.
Thank you, Marie-Laure. Rudy Vansnik. I'm from Europe, from Belgium, a country that's a specialist in having for more than a year and a half no government, while we have five governments. So to make things simple, I will try to walk you through the less funny part of the work we are doing in NPOC, its policy. It's trying to get procedures in a way that they are implementable to the whole ICANN world. And that's not that funny, because you have to study and discuss with a lot of colleagues and try to enter into a consensus. For instance, we are going to start a new PDP, a quite complex one. It's a translation and transliteration of contact data in the WHOIS. It's not that easy at all. As you all know, that the WHOIS data is something that everybody wants to hide. So when you talk about translation, it means it's public. And the other question that is on the table is, who is going to pay for that translation? Is it the registrant? Is it the registrar? Is it the registry? Is it law enforcement? So you see, we have a lot of questions on the table, and there is a certain urgency. The new GTLDs are not going to wait to start till we have thought that we have a solution. So we have always in this type of work a kind of limit in time. That means that when you're part of the policy world, most often you will have a lot of conference calls. For instance, when the PDP start, the frequency will be every week conference call. That's a minimum. So you see, it's not that funny. Because most of the time, as I'm in Europe, I'm in the middle, it's overnight. And that's something you have to bear with. But it looks like you're used to it, because you're already here at 7 o'clock. So I would say you're all candidates to join us in the policy work, because you're used to be there in the early hours. So welcome, join us.
I don't know whether it was a good idea to bring them with me. They keep telling you that it's terrible to be here. And it's
no fun, but I had the first meeting today at 4 o'clock. And do me a favor. If you can't sleep because of jet lag, just go outside at 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning. 5 o'clock is already too late. And have a look around what's going on. You find the lobby full of groups of people already working. That's how it is. And as the week goes on, you see more and more zombies like me running around, who don't know where they are, who they are, what they are, but it works. And that is, for me, the message about ICANN, is the most, socially dysfunctional group of people you can ever meet, but it's one of the most rewarding and most important group. It is not about pretending, and it's not about saying, look, we are doing something and nothing happened. Actually, what you see here is true. It's real. The decisions here are not manipulated by some companies or some group of people somewhere. When you get engaged here, your voice counts. And that's really, really important. And that's why we have that fight about internet governance with the ITU, UN, IGF, and all that stuff, because we have to make sure that the multi-stakeholder model, as it stands, is getting improved and that it is generally accepted, because in the digital world, this is the only way forward.
Klaus is right. We are very, very tired, but also very happy and highly motivated volunteers. So, you know, there is a balance to it, because otherwise we wouldn't survive. And so I don't know whether you have some, like, a couple of, quick questions, please.
So my name is Edwin, and I'm from Ghana. I'm just wondering, what kind of NGOs can join the NPOC? Do they have to have anything to do with the internet, or just any NGO? So, like, a typical example, there's an NGO that focuses on providing good, clean water to the rural areas in Africa, for instance. Or there could be an NGO that is focused on closing what we call the feedback loop, trying to get citizens engaged with government via open data, open government, and all those kind of things. Are these the kind of NGOs that are accepted into the NPOC, or, I mean, what is it like?
We're going to give you the brochure, but basically, to summarize, according to the charter, to the bylaws, basically you need to be a not-for-profit and to have a website. Okay. And that would be like the basic requirements. The fields in which the NGO works is, I mean, it's not really our business, in the sense that the formal requirements, once you fulfill them, you're free to enter. But obviously, if you deal with issues that are very remote and not really linked to the internet, you might not be very interested in getting into this business. But you won't be prevented to do it. I mean, you're free to join. And also, once you have joined, the level of interaction is up to you. I mean, you can be very, very active and engage in working groups and be volunteer to be on the executive committee if there is a vacancy, but you can also sit back and listen and read. I mean, it's really up to you and the time and the interest you have as a representative of an NGO.
Ali Al-Mishal from Bahrain. I represent Bahrain Internet Society as an NGO. Can we join NPOC even if we are part of other group within an ICANN, or there is a limitation?
It depends on ISOC chapters. We do have ISOC chapters as members. You can. It depends on which community you belong to. If it's outside the GNSO, I remember that you can. If it's within the GNSO, there is a conflict of interest. But.
And the gentleman who's walking around here from Belgium is actually an ISOC board member.
Yes.
So no problem with ISOC.
Yeah, we have a lot of ISOC chapters.
Good. The other question is, I mean, for these coming new fellows, where do you think they can, if we compare at large as an end user with the NPOC as an NGO? So, what will be the different, or which one will be more attractive to fit them in that?
I'll let you be the judge of this. You join both, No, seriously, because it doesn't. You join. We do actually have people who are in both groups, and some of them are active in our group, and let's say passive listeners and or members of the other, and vice versa. So once you are in, you decide, you know, where you want to go and where you want to be the most active. It's up to you. Or in both groups, actually, if you have the time.
And actually, it kind of reminds me of yesterday we had Elisa Cooper from the BC, and she was saying that her peer from Mark Monitor sits with the registry and she's with the BC. And I bring that up just from the sense of you all know each other here now, or you have a peer who you are going to engage into ICANN when you go back home or is already engaged in ICANN. And perhaps as you're trying to find where maybe your organization as a group or you individually fit, you might kind of share that. You know, you're a little bit more interested in the NPOC. They're a little bit more thinking they are, you know, part of at large or something, and kind of share and compare if you don't have the time to taste them both. You know, and it's just another option of how to try to do that. You know, we're here, we can, you know, kind of share on your own conference calls and what's happening in each group and kind of get a feel for the pace and what's happening. Do you want to take one more time-wise? Okay. There's so many, I don't know. But we haven't heard from you yet, so let's try there. Oksana?
Good morning. I'm Oksana Radu, Romania. In terms of the policies you work on, is their adoption entirely voluntary, or is there any binding mechanism?
The binding mechanism is that everything is discussed till the cows come home, and that in the end there is a minimum consensus, and that minimum consensus is a policy we will advocate for. Sometimes you have discussions that are taking 2 or 3 years, but it's worth it because what comes out of it is actually well thought out and makes sense.
Really sorry, but we have in 3 minutes. We are due to be in another room with a group of people who are going to interview us. So, and they're usually on time. I mean, it's the ATRT team, and they are going actually to share the results of the report with us. So we can't really be late because it would be rude of us. And they're usually on time because so we have to run. But I would love to stay more and share and listen to the questions. But really, you can approach us if you see us in the corridors. You can join us at our session this morning or on Thursday. Thank you very much.
And don't forget, Thursday 9:30, the revolution is taking place in Retiro 8. A.
He's such a good program committee chair.
Thank you so much. And thank you for bringing all the materials, too. This is super. You know, Marie, one other thing, too, for these folks to know how quickly a volunteer can move up, how fast did you move into the chair position?
Oh, my God.
That's a good one.
I mean, a year ago, I didn't know what ICANN was doing, basically, to be honest with you. I mean, a year and a half ago, I don't know. I didn't know. So I've been formally engaged with ICANN since actually a year, exactly October last year, I was admitted. And within 6 months, I got to be for due to special circumstances, so I got to be a candidate to the election, and I was elected chair. So... Not that I'm a special person, it's just, you know, I'm not at home, but circumstances and, you know, motivation and interests, so it's just an example of, you know, mm-hmm. what you can and cannot do. It's up to you.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. And we're letting our members of the nominating committee settle in. Very good. And Yuri or Cheryl, I'll let you start and introduce each other and whoever else is in the room with you.
Buenos dias. Bom dia. Good morning. My name is Yuri Länsipuro, the chair of the nominating committee
today and tomorrow, but then then on Friday, Cheryl Langdon Orr will take over. She has been the chair-elect this year. We also have here a few members. We have Glenn McKnight, I think.
Could you all stand
we
up?
Have Siranus,
stand up so
Siranus Renan. We have Veronica Kretju. And we have our staff persons, Joette Jukhanna and Jiaju Kimoto here. Okay, what is the nominating committee? You see a box there on the screen, right in the middle and under the board of directors. A nominating committee is there because ICANN has no members who would elect the leaders in an annual general meeting. ICANN has no shareholders who would elect leaders. So instead, this democratic element in the ICANN structure is the nominating committee. It's composed of people from those same boxes. We have representatives from GNSO, ASO, ELAC, and so on and so forth. 16 voting members in total, 2 liaisons to the organizations. You see here on the right-hand side of the picture, and then you have a non-voting chair elect, and non-voting associate chair. And what we do is that we elect a total of 8 members of the board of directors. We elect 3 to GNSO, 3 to CCNSO, and 5 to ALEC. This system is, as I said, it is a sort of democratic element because there is no sort of general election in the ICANN structure, and a nominating committee not only finds these people and nominates them. Actually, we are also all powerful in selecting them. Okay, you will be the board of directors. So it's we are quite powerful. Traditionally, the nominating committee was known as a black box. It was like this committee of cardinals who elect the Pope whenever it's needed. And they go in somewhere and then, you know, they sit there and the white smoke comes out and habemus papam. Now we have been trying to change that. Also because the ATRT, the group that is trying to develop accountability and transparency within ICANN, they have told us so. But also, I would say, from our own volition, we understood that we have to strike a new balance, between two seemingly contradictory requirements. The nature of our work is, of course, to find people who are willing to be volunteers, and they don't want their names to be out there at the time when they volunteer, because you know, it would be a loss of face if they are not elected. So we have to have absolute confidentiality about the names, the candidacies, to protect the privacy of these people. At the same time, we have to strive. We have to keep the standard, which is, by now, it's universal in ICANN, of transparency and openness. A year ago in Toronto, when our committee had its kickoff meeting, we decided that the process has to be open, but the data is secret. Data meaning the names of the candidates. And I think that we have succeeded in implementing that at least in 2 ways. We have held open meetings which was a novelty. The NOMCOM was like the, you know, the Politburo of the Kremlin or something. The people even didn't know where they met and so on and so forth. But now, of course, we have had at each public ICANN meeting, there's been at least one open NOMCOM working meeting. And the other thing is that we have also been issuing monthly report cards for the various stakeholder groups and constituencies that have their members on the NOMCOM. So I believe that we have taken a step towards greater transparency. Our cycle is always the same. It starts with a kickoff meeting, at the annual general meeting of ICANN. In the case of Chair's committee, it will be Friday and Saturday. The process will be started, agreeing on the rules and meeting a lot of people to get their input. From there, it's recruitment outreach by all possible means. We try to get candidates, and it's because if we need a good candidate pool to be sure that we have people to select from. In 2013 experience, there were very few candidates in the beginning, and we really thought, we were worried that perhaps nobody wants to be an ICANN director anymore, let alone all these other positions. And we even extended the deadline from 1st of May to 15th of May. But then what happened is that there was a real deluge, a real flow of applications at the very, very, actually at the very end of this period, so that we had 111, which is a record, 111 applications. And from there starts another phase. I mean, obviously we have to narrow down a choice, and that is the difficult part. It's easy to go around and say, hey, please apply and fill in the SOIs and send us all these papers. From May on, we have to start pruning this whole thing down. And finally, we come through straw polls using the wiki pages, protected wiki pages, and also phone conferences, weekly phone calls. We come to a situation where we then can have like less than 10 people for the board positions and comparable numbers for the others. And finally, at the final selection meeting, we interview the top candidates and go into seclusion, and that is really like the cardinals. I mean, we are completely secluded for 2 days, and after that, this list emerges. So that's how it happens. I turn the floor to Cheryl.
Thank you very much, Yuria. Cheryl Langdonore, and I'd like to say that it's a delight to be back in the fellowship room. I've had the honour in some other leadership positions I've had over the years to come and talk to you, and I'm a great supporter, am I not, of the fellowship movement. So please, if you see me, or indeed any of the people who stood up earlier, often found wearing these red lanyards, but do get a look at the faces, because they're the people that you can approach and you should approach to ask questions. They will only tell you what they can. We have very strict rules of engagement with community. But what I'd like to say to you, of course, is now you've heard how it happens, and I would like to mention to you that within that grouping, you were told about voting and non-voting members. The leadership team of the NOMCOM are non-voting. Right? We are there to ensure that things run well, efficiently, are managed in an appropriate way, deal with the dynamics of the group. So as I've served as the chair elect this year and become the chair, I get to choose another person. So it's a leadership team of three. And of that leadership team of three, how could I do better than to have Yurio stay with me as the associate chair? I mean, you hear the experience, you hear the knowledge, and you hear the ability that he has to communicate. I want to apologise for, in fact, and I just checked that he hadn't hopped in, and I don't think he has yet. Our chair-elect, Stefan van Gelder, does have competing meeting commitments this morning. Otherwise, he would be here. And it is an assumption, that if you are chair-elect and you have your training in the first year as your chair-elect, you have a good chance to be confirmed as chair. I was lucky I got through that process. But please be assured it is a process and it has a quality system associated with it. The Board Governance Committee appoint the chair and the chair-elect. They do that appointment each year. The community appoints the others. They're the voting members, and the non-voting observers and liaisons are appointed by the community. One of the pathways to interaction and leadership that I would like to encourage each and every one of you to think about is within the communities you choose to operate with. And might I say that should include the GAC, right? You would perhaps feel this is a role you would like to play, to serve on a future nominating committee, and feel that you should ask questions of those of the nominating committee, past or present, that are here, and see exactly what type of commitment and workload it might be, and then work within your communities to see whether or not they believe and have the trust in you to do it. But it's another leadership pathway, and I think you should all consider that as a very, very valuable one. The new thing this year, apart from amazingly coming forward in the world of transparency, because as Yurio said, we just conduct business meetings now, normal meetings in open form, so you can come and watch what we do. And there is a very important meeting on Wednesday. Help me, Joette, is it 11?
10:30.
10:30?
To noon.
10:30 to 12 in. Help me with the room. Here, right, not... In Italia. This will be the meeting of the nominating committee. It is open. Come, bring your friends, bring people who don't know how to spell nomcom. Come and listen and come and learn. And it's an ideal time to do that because it is the situation where the outgoing nominating committee they've prepared and are now giving to the incoming nominating committee their report. So you will hear a lot more detail. There will be an opportunity to ask questions, providing time is there, and we would love to see each and every one of you. I'm going to stop talking, and I'm hoping you've got something to ask.
Yeah, questions, please.
Thank you. My name is Vivek. How do you ensure that there is proper representation from all over the world? So ensure that every community, no matter how small or how not engaged enough right now, is represented in different parts of ICANN?
That's a good question. I don't think that we can be sure because, you know, the world is pretty large and our resources don't really reach everywhere. But we do our best. How we do it, of course, our members go to a number of internet governance-related watering holes every year. They go to IGF, the regional and national IGFs. They go to various meetings of the WSIS process and all these meetings you hear about. So that is they are one of the recruitment opportunities. We also used this year, and let's see what happened next year, used the services of a professional headhunting agency. And of course they are usually hunting for different kind of talent, but this was a quite good experience that we got So that we also request everybody else at ICANN, and especially the ICANN leadership, to spread a word about the availability of these about these positions.
If I may, I was doing this, as Yuria was saying. Each and every one of you have a role to play in your local community. I'll think about that, Ali. I will deeply consider that. I think I did throw a little bit of attention to that side, but I can change. It's all right. Okay, so only this side of the room, right? We only want this side of the room to do outreach, and I could even give you allocations of which areas to outreach. This side of the room, up to a certain point. And to that end, Joette has some of the tools and materials that we do utilise. These are little bookmarks. You will see these at a number of future ICANN meetings. Feel free to grab 1, 2 or 22. We also have clever little business cards, and this is also important. On the business card, it has a URL, a link to one of the places on our web page. And there are two things you can do. You can nominate. You can say, I believe I have something to contribute to the CCNSO Council, and I believe I would like to put in a statement of interest, but I'm also going to click that button and say, I am interested in a position. And there is another link, which is, you think you know someone who would be good for one of the roles. So you may be at a networking function in your own areas of interest, and you meet someone who clearly meets the criteria. The criteria is published, and you need to look at the criteria because it will change each year. There's a set of established everyone has to have and desirable characteristics, but there is always a set of specific requirements that the receiving bodies, the CCNSO, the GNSO, the ALAC, and indeed the board, give us. So if they want someone who is perfect at crochet, at knitting, at sewing, and they tell us that's what they want, that's also what we will rank and look for. So look each year at the criteria. If you know of someone, or if you know someone who may know someone, you may put their name in, and then we reach out, okay? And that's a very good entree. So you're probably the best way of getting out to the edges. And you'll notice I did say the GAC. There are some rules. For example, we don't take sitting and currently serving leaders. So you can't have a president of a country, right? But if you've had political experience, if you've run departments, that does not mean you can't, if you fit the criteria, make it through the process. So if in doubt, ask us and we will tell you whether there is a limitation or an opportunity. Any other questions?
Did I miss some bragging rights on a couple of the fellows who have gone through the nominating committee process? So I think Leon had to move on to another meeting, but Leon Sanchez from Mexico, a two-time fellow, came up through the nominating committee process and is now sitting at large. Celia Lerman came up through the NOMCOM process, a hometown girl here from Buenos Aires, Argentina, and she is busy taking care of one-month-old George here at the hotel at the same time as taking her seat as on the CCNSO Council. And Baran Gillan, who could not make it here with us today, but a two-time fellow from Prague and Beijing, and she is also at large. So I think we also have outgoing Sokol from Albania, who's been on the CCNSO. So it's all attainable. So I rattle off those names because it is so attainable. I know because I read the applications coming in, 121 for this particular round of fellows and 30 here And so I know how unique you are, and I know how experienced you are, and I know the resume that you all have come in here with. So it is attainable around this table. And you also have a network. And you know, I stress this whole bonding thing that you're doing here, but you also have a network outside that you will be able to help this committee, you know, find those people to fill these spots. You know these people. You know the people that you work with, the organizations you volunteer with, the universities that you came from. You know, so think about that when you're leaving. You know, you don't know what you don't know, and you have it all that they want.
And even wanting more, as Sirinush quite correctly reminded me, three graduate fellows, of course, are serving with the incoming NOMCOM. So there's a number of pathways.
I think you maybe you've stunned them. They're in consideration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for hearing us out. Thank you.
Well, Tracy is very excited that there was a little bit of time left here because he had a conflicting meeting at 7 a.m. On his time slot to talk to you all about the GAC. So, Tracy, I'm going to have you jump up to whatever spot you want. Tracy Hackshaw is a fellowship alumni. Tracy joined in Sydney from the fellowship program in 2009. And he took the seat of vice chair for GAC at the Durban meeting in July. So again, just reflects how attainable. It's kind of like Marie said, it's just motivation and, you know, what you want to do and, of course, some fate and other things. But Tracy, the floor is yours.
All right. Hola, buenos días.
This is Tracy Hackshaw. Good morning.
Glad to see so many of you here in this early morning meeting. I've been through this how many times, Janice? 3-4 times with Janice and the early morning meetings and the laptops down, or now iPads. I think iPads off. Yes, so I'm one of you. So it's nice to come and speak to you now as a former fellow and be in the position to speak to you as the vice chair of the GAC, which is, again, as everyone was saying, everything is very attainable. And just to let you know, Janice, we had a GAC re-election on Saturday, and so I was re-elected vice chair for another term. So that's good. So I'll be... Thank you. So everything is very attainable. So the time I have, and what I'm going to do is try to maybe unveil the mystery of the GAC, which I think has been very challenging for many of you. So basically, the GAC is the Governmental Advisory Committee, which you, I think you can see on the slide in the different color, strangely enough, box. Brown box, yes. I don't know what that means. But it's, yes, it's one of those committees that is unique, as all are. But this one is made up of governments. Anybody here from government on the fellowship program? Just raise your hand. Right, and do you know who your GAC member is? Yeah? Good, right, so that's good. So if not, and your country is not on the GAC, probably now is a good time to either agitate your home government to represent, or even yourself if you are interested, and ask them if you can represent on the GAC and in future meetings. The GAC has instituted travel support now for several people. I think it's 30. It's quite a lot, from developing countries, using the same criteria that the fellowship uses. So, and I remember Janice and I worked on that new criteria, so that's very welcoming. So the GAC has 100, and if I'm not mistaken, 130 countries now. And several countries coming into the GAC are from developing countries, Africa, Pacific, now Caribbean. I'm from the Caribbean, by the way, Trinidad and Tobago. And thank you to Jamaica here. So Jamaica. So my colleague. Anybody else from the Caribbean here? Dominica. Ah, excellent. Fantastic. And Dominica just joined the GAC, by the way. Yes, and he's not here today, unfortunately, in the meeting, but he's here. Okay, so about the GAC. So I'm trying to make it seem that the GAC is not, you know, it's a friendly place. And you may have heard all these stories about what the GAC's doing and closed meetings and you can't come in and so on. So I'm here to tell you, certainly from this meeting, we've opened all the meetings except for two. So all the meetings are open except for the ones that explicitly close, which will be a prep meeting for the board today, just before the board meeting. So the entire meeting is open today. So feel free to visit if you haven't done so before. And the communique drafting, which is normally closed anyhow, and that's on Wednesday from about 2 o'clock. So the morning session is open as well. And what you find in the GAC meetings is that there will be, and especially today, the community comes a lot to speak to us, and a lot of questions are asked. So today we'll have several reports from, I think, ATRT will be here. ATRT2 will be reporting. We'll have the board GAC meeting, which is the most popular meeting in the ICANN agenda, actually. Because I sit on a meeting strategy working group, which is another group that's set up within ICANN. We did an analysis of all the meetings. And the GAC board meeting is the most popular meeting, in addition to the, of course, the open forum and the opening ceremony. So the most popular meeting is the board GAC meeting. It's very generally very entertaining, if you want to use that word. And a lot of things can get resolved or not resolved, as the case may be, in that meeting. So the GAC meets three times a year. It meets along with the ICANN meetings. The representatives of the GAC are official representative from the government, so you have to be a GAC member, you have to have a letter sent to the GAC chair nominating you as the GAC representative from your government. So you can't just walk into a GAC meeting and be a GAC member, unfortunately. You'd have to be an official government representative. And the GAC sees itself as the body which has deals with public policy issues. What does that mean? So I know all the committees have the same thinking, but because we are governments, I'm trying to speak as a government representative here, in the theory of politics of government, the government represents the interests of all, and the government generally are elected by the people. So if you use that theory in most democratic states, you would find that theoretically, the GAC members do represent the public interest and represent public policy from that perspective and attempt to represent all interests of business, civil society, academia, etc., etc. And believe it or not, that does happen in the GAC meetings, but you can imagine that itself creates its own issues. So when you're representing all of those interests in one forum to discuss certain issues, you tend to find a lot of conflict and a lot of discussion in the meetings that will generally result in very long debates about what should go into our communique or into response and negotiating of text and so on. So if you wanted to see a UN-style meeting in action, come to a GAC meeting, because you would see a variant of what the UN does. Not as official, but certainly along those lines about negotiating between countries. You will see different regions participating and representing regional interests. You would see even regions working together to represent a collective interest and represent that thinking. And you'll also see, in many cases, quite unique perspectives being brought by developing countries on topics that you'd be surprised to hear what an African nation might have to say on a particular issue in response to what a European nation might say. And the interests may diverge dramatically. So in terms of that kind of thinking, if you're interested in that kind of work, it's very, very healthy debate and healthy discussion. And I'm very happy to be involved in that and be the vice chair in that discussion. Now, the GAC operates very formally on operating principles. The GAC website is gac.icann.org, and it's gotten very open with its documents recently. So we have things, all the communiques are posted there, and it's a very rich repository of information for those who are interested in what the GAC has been doing. But also recently, we've put up a register of advice. So what the GAC does, like the other advisory committees, it provides advice. So it's not a policy-making body per se in the scheme of things as the SOs are, but the advisory. Now, in the case of the GAC, the board has to review GAC advice in a certain way, and the bylaws allow for that. As a matter of fact, if the board has to reject GAC advice, it has to be done formally, with reason, and if it's rejecting it, there will be a procedure thereafter, the rejection, to sort of come to another arrangement, a consensus, a compromise, as to why that was rejected and perhaps what the next step forward is. So it's very formal. So GAC advice is very important in the whole scheme of the ICANN world. And so when you see the GAC register of advice, the actual advice word means that what the GAC is saying is effectively, supposedly driving ICANN policy in the scheme of things. So for the new GTLD program, almost the entire program now is resting with the GAC in terms of the last steps for those the extensions that are outstanding. And if you look now at the register, you'll see exactly what's outstanding and what else you need to deal with in terms of contentious strings like .amazon and .halal and .islam and those strings. They're all sitting at last step in the GAC and now moving out to the board to be discussed. So
Yeah, you can see me looking at you saying, I think we're finished.
Okay, good.
So we were able to slip Tracy in since he was conflicted at 7, but Bill Drake is here from the NCUC, so I do want to respect his time too. But Tracy, thank you so very much.
Sure.
And if there's anybody who's available in the hallways and coffee breaks and beer breaks and all that kind of stuff, it's Tracy. That's why his voice is so coarse right now. He makes himself available to everybody. So as he said, the meetings are open. I remember going to my first GAC board meeting in Brussels, and the room was too small because it became so packed. It was rings of people coming around, so we've learned to make a larger room space for it. But it's a great opportunity that you wouldn't have. Again, pick those things that face-to-face, you might not have an opportunity. You can hear the recording later of other meetings, but those that, you won't get the chance to really see the faces of the people expressing their passion and their cause, select wisely. And Tracy, thank you so much.
Sure. So 9 a.m. in the room downstairs at San Telmo, GAC meeting begins. All right, thanks a lot. Bye.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Bill Drake. I'm the chair of the non-commercial users constituency. I have some nice little flyers here for you. Can I see how many hands, how many people on this side speak Spanish? Two.
I can help you.
I would appreciate that. And how many on this side? Boy, we don't have a lot of Spanish speakers. Well, all right, then I guess I'll mostly pass around the English ones. Could you do that? Here's a few Spanish for the folks that. So I'll tell you a little bit about NCUC. Unfortunately, I have a 3.5-hour meeting to run at 9 o'clock. It's constituency day. For us, it's always a rather full schedule, so we're pretty packed today. So I'm going to have to get out here promptly and go do that. I understand that you've already heard from Magali about the NCSG, the stakeholder group that we are a part of, right?
Bill, actually, I misspoke on that. She talked to me to speak about it because she had to leave, so if you could start with that would be great.
Oh, okay. Have they heard from NPOC?
Yes, they have. They were just here this morning.
Okay, fine. So you know that basically the generic name supporting organization is the part of ICANN that manages the policy development process for generic top-level domains, .com, .org, blah, 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 blah. Not the ccTLDs, but the other ones. And that it is organized into four stakeholder groups. There's the registries, the registrars, and they together form the contracted party house, that is to say the parties that are under contract with ICANN and hence regulated effectively by ICANN. And then on the other side, we have a non-contracted party house that represents users of different kinds, and there's two stakeholder groups there. One is the commercial stakeholder group, which represents businesses and includes intellectual property interests, the business constituency, and the internet service providers. And then on the other side, we have the non-commercial stakeholder group. The NCSG was born, I guess it was, and I should remember, 2010, or I think it was 2010, 2011. And effectively, it groups two constituencies, NCUC, that's us, and NPOC, who you've heard from before. NCUC, actually, in a weird way.
And Bill, I know you're trying to rush through it, but
I will speak more slowly.
Thank you.
So, NCUC was created at the outset of ICANN as the place for global civil society. Thank you very much. Participants in the process to try to advance public interest objectives within the GNSO process. And NCUC then is basically about as old as ICANN. However, in 2010, I guess it was, when the GNSO was reorganized into this current structure, we had to have a stakeholder group rather than just a constituency. So the stakeholder group was created basically mostly out of NCUC, but then the NPOC people joined and formed a new constituency alongside us. So we've been here from the beginning. We have about 300 members, about 85 organizational members, and 220-something, I think, individuals. One of the important things to note about NCUC relative to some other groups that you may have heard about throughout this experience is that it is a place that individuals can join. You don't have to be a representative of an organization in order to be a member of NCUC. What is NCUC about? Basically, our main focus from the beginning has been the promotion of civil liberties and human rights, effectively. There's been a long-standing interest, in particular, on issues of freedom of expression, privacy, access to knowledge, things like that. Over time, the focus of NCUC has grown in parallel with the developments within ICANN itself. The agenda of the things that we focus on has expanded to include a lot of issues pertaining to, for example, the concerns of developing countries in the GNSO process, the broader global internet governance arrangements and policy frameworks pertaining to that. Many of us have been deeply involved from the beginning in the World Summit on the Information Society, the creation of the Internet Governance Forum, and all those kinds of activities that go on under the United Nations rubric. So basically, it has been a place that has been concerned with a range of sort of public interest type issues here. And you can see in our little snazzy brochure a few other examples of the kinds of things that we've been particularly concerned with. But as we say here, I don't have my reading glasses on, protecting non-commercial use of users, diversity and consumer choice, human rights, freedom of expression, privacy, access to knowledge, development, multilingual internet, global internet governance. That's a pretty representative sample of our interests. I haven't had enough coffee today, so I don't even recall. Did I already say that about two-thirds of our members are from outside the United States? No, I did not, so there we go. So it's a very international or global organization. We have many members from around the world, and it's probably, I would guess, one of the, maybe NPOC is the same, I'm not sure. It's certainly one of the very few places in ICANN where people from the U.S. are in a minority. So that's one of our definitive characteristics, I suppose. And on many of the particular kinds of issues that have been faced, come up in the GNSO, we have pushed for essentially trying to build in protections in a process that otherwise would be very much driven solely by the contracted parties who seek to expand the domain space and have as much freedom as they want, quite naturally, to be able to sell domain names and manage domain names as they please, on the one hand, and the commercial interests of the intellectual property folks in trademark issues and so on the other. So we often find ourselves in curious alignments in the GNSO process, because sometimes we agree with the registries and against the registrars and the commercial stakeholder group. Sometimes we agree with the registrars against the registries and the commercial stakeholder group. Sometimes we agree with the commercial stakeholder group and not the contracted parties. So this is very characteristic of the GNSO in general. Shifting geometry of interests and alignments and votes on issues. Now, of course, I think you understand that in the NCSG, in the GNSO generally, the different groups of the GNSO, the stakeholder groups, elect members to the GNSO Council. The GNSO Council is the coordination body that manages the overall policy development process. But much of the real work that is done on domain name issues actually is done in working groups of the community. So those working groups will develop a proposal on something, and then they get language that they've worked out amongst themselves, often with great difficulty, and sometimes they don't actually succeed. They come back with split kind of positions or incoherent positions, and then those come up to the GNSO. And it's at the GNSO level then that voting occurs, where we actually would adopt formal motions that would say, okay, the work that's come from this working group, we will adopt this as the GNSO's official policy, which then, of course, goes to the board, and the board decides what they want to do. And sometimes, of course, the board decides that it doesn't like what the GNSO did and does something else, which makes some people unhappy, because there are specific provisions in the bylaws about the conditions under which the board should really follow the GNSO. There has to do with voting thresholds and things like this. I won't bore you. But if they're, normally speaking, if there's a very strong consensus in the GNSO community and the GNSO Council, which reflects that community, for a policy, that policy nominally should be adopted by ICANN. Now, in some cases, as I say, the board may think we've done the wrong thing, and there's certain provisions that allow them then to say, well, then we're going to do something else. There has been concern in recent years about a trend that many people perceive, that this bottom-up process, which is very much what the GNSO is, of aggregating the interests and perspectives of people in the community and then percolating them up into working group outputs and then motions adopted by the council, is being subverted or bypassed by decisions taken by the board and or the GAC. And this has happened on a number of occasions recently, and this has been a source of great disquiet to people who believe that the whole fundamental nature of the multi-stakeholder process that we champion when we go around the world, not only in ICANN meetings but in UN context and so on, is the very point that it is bottom-up. It is supposed to reflect the views of the community. So if the community comes together on a position and then says we think it should be X, and then the GAC comes in and tells the board we don't like that, we want something else, and the board goes off and says, okay, we're going to do that because we want to accommodate the GAC or some other interest, powerful interest sometimes work behind the scenes, then the process is subverted. So that's an ongoing issue and a source of tension within ICANN, but of course this is entirely natural. When people sometimes say that the process is in some respects broken because the GNSO works slowly or comes up with divided views or comes up with something that the governments don't like or whatever, I think it has to be borne in mind. That's reflecting the interests of the people who are actually out there in the broader internet governance environment, and it's quite natural that we have different perspectives. So, you know, the intellectual property interests that come together in the intellectual property constituency are going to push for very strong and expansive trademark protections because that's what's in their interest. And because we believe in access to knowledge and not having excessive, in our view, trademark protection, we're going to push back and advocate the opposite. And it's through the multi-stakeholder process that these ideas get fought out and some consensus is either reached or not. So the fact that there are, both within the GNSO and within ICANN more generally, strong differences of view doesn't, I think, is not really troubling. It's to be expected, and it's an adequate reflection of the real world. The real world is one where people have different interests depending on where they, you know, there's an expression in American politics, where you stand is where you sit. Depending on where you work and what your perspective is, then you're going to advocate different positions. So that's effectively the main point about NCUC. Now, normally when I've met with the fellows in the past, one of the first questions that people have asked all the time is, what's the difference between NCUC and at large? Because I know that you hear from a number of different groups that come around and say, this is what we do, please join us. So, and at large might sound somewhat similar in some respects. So just to be clear about this, I'm involved on the at large side as well. I've been on the board of directors of the European at large organization for 5 years. They simply perform different functions within the ICANN structure. At large represents users generally, both business users and non-commercial users, but on the full range of ICANN issues. They're not limited to the GNSO. They nominally have a broad ambit that pertains to, they could give advice to the board on any range of matters, whether it's security or something else, whereas we're focused on the GNSO process. So that's the first difference. A second difference between the two would be in the at-large environment, you can join as an individual and be on a listserv and express views, but actually the way voting and decisions are done, you have the five different regional at-large organizations, which each involve a number of organizational members. And I think in Naralo, the North American one, individuals can join, but I think in all the other ones, it's only organizational members. We in Uralo have been trying to figure out how to accommodate individuals, and we're having an ongoing discussion about creating a special at-large structure that would represent our individual members, like me, so that they would have one vote along the other 25 organizational members within European at-large. But again, the point is that in terms of having a direct input into how the group is managed and so on. For example, in our case, NCUC, we have elections run that are involve the whole community. In fact, we're having an election right now. Over the next 2 weeks, we will put in place, I think, a new executive committee with representatives. By the way, I should point out, we have representatives of each of the five ICANN regions, as well as the chair, which is me. And in the context of at large, so there's a direct linkage there between the individual members' perspective and what they think should be done and who they vote for, and they can provide direct input into what our decisions will be, etc. Whereas in the at large context, the ALAC group is a bit separate from the individual membership, and there's not as, I would argue, is not as tight a linkage there. So that's that question. And now I have 10 minutes that I can take questions if anybody has any. And then I run off to do my constituency day meeting. So fantastic. Love to see hands. Please introduce yourself when you speak. Yes, we'll start with... Yes.
My name is Samson from Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
When we see the interests that you represent, I can probably see that they're competing with the interests of the commercial group or the commercial constituency. For instance, you mentioned the privacy and the access to knowledge compete with the intellectual property and with organizations' need to collect information. So particularly with the resource and expertise the commercial constituencies can afford, how much is a challenge for your group to cope with their interest, and how do you deal with that?
That's a very...
Particularly, the multi-stakeholderism approach possibly allows for this kind of vulnerability. Thanks.
That's a question that cuts to the very heart of the whole matter, of course, obviously. And it's a very good question. Obviously, if you're talking about large companies with substantial resources and so on, they're in a much stronger position to be able to influence a lot of things normally than we would be as a ragtag gaggle of nonprofit actors who are seeking to promote our conception of the public interest based on what our members believe and so on, because we don't have those resources. On the other hand, one of the things about ICANN that is really distinctive relative to any other process that I've been involved in is that despite those differences, when it comes to actually voting on policy, we have votes just like they do. Okay? So, for the GNSO to adopt a policy, there are certain voting thresholds that have to be achieved in order for a policy to be adopted. We have 6 seats on the GNSO Council. The commercial stakeholder group has 6 seats on the GNSO Council. So we are balanced in terms of the number of votes that we can bring to the table. Now, the registries and registrars, they have fewer seats, but their seats hold more votes. So the point is, within the architecture, the institutional architecture that's been set up here, I would argue that civil society has a greater ability to affect real policy outcomes than in pretty much any other multi-stakeholder space that I know of, and I'm very involved in UN and other types of things. Marilia here sat through the GNSO Council meeting on the weekend and watched us operate or fail to operate, depending on your perspective. And, if you go to a council meeting and you watch the way it works, a vote with sufficient majority has to be made to pass a policy. And that means that in a lot of cases, somebody has to persuade us to support them. Now, there are also additional complications. There's a NOMCOM appointee who kind of holds the balance in the non-commercial house, because that makes 7 votes. But sometimes for some certain things, you need 8 votes on our side. So often some effort has to be made to reach out and accommodate across the aisle. So it's through that kind of a process, which is a normal democratic politics process, that one side says this, the other side says that, and then you're trying to find the place in between. And I would argue, while, civil society in this body, as in most bodies, is not the dominant force by any stretch of the imagination, we have very often been able to soften otherwise really bad proposals and make them better. And we have often been able to put ideas on the table, which then the other groupings had to take up and address, and so on. So, for example, things like human rights. When we talk about human rights in the council, most of the business folks don't have quite a sense what that really means in relation to the to domain names. And so then we get into discussion and some effort to try to figure out how do they address the kinds of concerns that we're raising occurs. And so right now they're having a big battle over privacy aspects of the new registry, the replacement for the traditional Whois structure. And again, our people are there, and they're saying, wait, no, you can't set it up in that way because that would not protect privacy of individuals at all. We need to have the following protections built into the mechanism. And if we don't get that, we'll vote no against it, and then they'll have to find some way to overcome our no vote by building stronger alliances, etc. So we have a measure of influence that I think is greater than what you see, for example, in a lot of United Nations-based processes. The gentleman here was next. Yes.
I have a question more the workings of ICANN. So if you can help, that would be great. If not, I'll bother Janice with that. We heard throughout the day different people are working on different constituency are working on different topics, but the Whois came up again and again. Like Whois, there might be other topics that all the different constituencies are working on. So how do you ensure that not two separate constituencies are working on a, or started a PDP process or something similar at, and they will realize only at the end that both of them were working parallelly on the same thing?
Well, that's a good question. Whois is an example of a policy fight that's been going on since the beginning of ICANN. And it is something that is driven largely within the GNSO Council. And so, therefore, everybody's aware of who's involved and what positions they take. Now, at large, because they float across, can also express their views. And there are differences between at-large and NCUC on some issues. I mean, at-large has tended to be much more, they say, at-large, the ALAC, the people who actually vote and set the policy, have tended to favor a approach to Whois, an approach to privacy, an approach to intellectual property, which is much closer to the commercial stakeholder group's view than our view. They see that as consumer protection issue. So, you know, Whois, we want accurate information so that spammers and other people aren't able to hide and do things. We're more focused on the fact that, appropriate measures have to be put in place to prevent misuse of the domain name system, but we also want there to be protections, for example, for human rights workers who are operating in an endangering environment and who don't, maybe they don't want to have their, you know, all their details readily available. So in terms of the overall coordination, sure, within the GAC you'll have people working on the topic, within the GNSO you'll have people working on the topic, and there has to be more effective coordination, and often there isn't. Between the GAC and the GNSO, we meet with them every time, but very often, one of the problems is that the GAC does not send people to participate in the policy development process because they say nobody can represent the GAC. No one representative can go and capture the views of all the governments and bring them into the GNSO. So therefore, how would we do this? So we've tried for a long time to figure out ways through liaisons and other things, but this is an ongoing problem. The gentleman down here, and I've got just a couple minutes left, but yes.
This is Ahmed from Pakistan.
Hi.
Okay. My question is, you discuss right of speech in NCUC, mm-hmm. and definition of right of speech varies from region to region and culture to culture. So how do you reach on consensus in your meetings?
The point there, I would say, is the question from our standpoint is whether different conceptions of appropriate speech and so on are something that is properly addressed through the domain name system. And our argument would be the domain name system should be neutral. You should not have censorship within the domain name system or anything else. If individual countries wish, because of their culture or whatever legal traditions, etc., to adopt certain types of approaches, for example, blocking, filtering, things like that, that's within their purview as sovereign states. But from the standpoint of what's the global framework, our view is the global framework should be neutral and not reflect either one kind of cultural orientation or another. It's just the domain name system should be open, and then how states and peoples interact with it is a matter of local choice. But I would have to say, generally speaking, in terms of the overall viewpoint, I would say certainly we are more, our membership is more inclined towards a more expansive approach to freedom of expression than probably maybe some other people from different cultural traditions might be. That's possible.
Any more questions?
Okay. I should also say, because I have said so in the past, everybody is, of course, most welcome to join our Constituency Day meeting. We're going to have a very interesting meeting today. We have visits from members of the boards of directors and senior staff to talk about the whole initiative with the Brazilian conference and the post-Montevideo process around internet governance. We have a meeting with the ATRT, the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, to share our concerns. We will be addressing a number of internal matters pertaining to our own organizational activities, upcoming conferences. One of the things I should have said, we often organize substantive policy conferences and things like that, and we will have a big one-day conference in Singapore the day before the ICANN meeting opens, which will focus probably on the global policy stuff. So we're going to be meeting for the next 3.5 hours, and anybody who wants to come and find out more is certainly most welcome to come along with us. We'll be in room, I think it's Aguila, which is, I guess, on the 24th floor.
Yeah.
And Amir and I have to go to that meeting now.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
I hope that was useful. Thank you.
Thanks. Fellows, we are done with the meeting, but as we always say, try to utilize this day as much as you can. It's a full back day. Be to the rooms that you think you are fit to that. And don't forget to the meeting at 6:30 for the social meeting. And if anybody want to have the at-large, any of these brochures, please pipe us here and you can get off these. Thank you.